Welcome to this week's Third Opinion Podcast. This week, we will tell you about Republican efforts to keep Congressman Ilhan Omar off the Foreign Relations Committee. They say because of an anti-Semitic remark she made a couple of years ago and apologized for. But we will explain that the GOP is telling a bald-faced lie. And we'll talk to the head of the Brandeis Center, Ken Marcus, which fights anti-Semitism on college campuses throughout the country. That and so much more. And don't forget, you can get your third opinion wherever you download your podcasts. And now, this week's Third Opinion Podcast. Good afternoon, or good morning, or good evening, whenever you're listening to this. This is the Third Opinion. Two Jews, three opinions on WKDW and the podcast. I'm Mike Deason.
I'm Lorene Jaffe.
And I hope you're having a good week, Lorene. I tried to figure out if there was any Jewish connection to the Chinese balloon that was shot down this week, and I couldn't. But that has dominated the news all weekend long. So I thought, but you know, there is no Jewish connection. So we can say
no one at this point that I've seen online is claiming that there's a Jewish connection, but who knows? There might be. I think that's a good way to start with what I thought was probably one of the most important stories of the week, which was from the diaspora affairs minister in Israel, Amichai Shikli. So Amichai Shikli came out with the Israeli government's report on anti-Semitism, and they found through their study that 68% of anti-Semitic discourse on social media originates in Palestinian or in pro-Palestinian circles. And what was also interesting about their findings is that they found that of the top five cities for the home of this propaganda, they found three U.S. cities top the list, including New York, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C. The other two were Berlin and, I believe, Paris. So you have, you know, two European cities, which, you know, should not be a surprise to any of us. But again, the home to some of the largest Jewish populations here in the States, New York, L.A., and Washington, D.C., being sort of in the top five for the anti-Semitic propaganda that's on social media. And I think what's really important,
it deals mainly, though, with their study, correct me if I'm wrong, is about the Palestinian situation. That's where most of the social media anti-Semitism emanates from.
That's what they found. That was their conclusion, that the vast majority, 68% of anti-Semitism in social media is coming from these pro-Palestinian or Palestinian circles, you know, sort of attacking Jews and attacking the validity of the Jewish state, or calling Israel an apartheid, et cetera. Some of the issues that you and I have talked about, but that's really the vast majority. And, you know, the purpose of this report is to help educate and inform some of the social media giants about this and what to look for and how to identify anti-Semitism and sort of how we can begin to really confront the vast majority of it. And I think the other thing that they point out...
But one of the things that's important, Lorene, is I don't think the social media companies, Twitter and Facebook, are doing their job.
Or Instagram. I mean, TikTok.
Right. Oh, TikTok.
TikTok,
yeah, right.
Instagram, Facebook.
They do YouTube, a terrible
social
job.
All these things. So these are all, you know, obviously anti-Semitism is very prolific. And the report said that they're right now, you know, overall, they find that social media giants are only removing about 20% of the content. And so that's one of the hopes with this report, is to help educate and inform them on how to identify so that it can be removed.
Didn't Facebook lay off a bunch of its, I don't know what, the gatekeepers?
Yeah, that was, like people who were reporting about some of that type of anti-Semitism, and they were supposed to be watchdogs for that, and then there were...
laid off, so yeah.
Right,
so.
And they became whistleblowers against the social media giants, so that's a big deal. I think, you know, we've got, I think being aware of the type of anti-Semitism that's out there, like sort of it's normalizing this Israel's an apartheid, ethnic cleansing, Israel's illegitimate. you know, it's almost like this normalization on social media that exists now, and we've got to address it head on. But I thought, you know, that leads me right to the next story, which I found really disturbing, that there was a New York, the state of New York, they have their, I guess, their annual exams. And so it was their annual Global History and Geography Regions 2 exam for high school students. It was a standardized test, which showed three different maps of Israel, one from like 1947, one post-1948, another one from 1981. And it was like, and the question was, who do you think benefited from based upon this map? Like, in essence, the Zionists and Jewish immigrants.
Well, you know, no, but the problem was the way they had four choices, Laureen, and the way they worded the Jewish choice on the thing is what really I thought was prejudicial. If they had just said Israel, Palestine, or whatever, but they picked three countries, and then they said the Zionist state. I mean, that's where it's so prejudicial, it seems to me.
Right, and it pretty much ignored the Jews that were living, right? We all know that there are more Jews in Jerusalem than any other population, and pre-1948, and it sort of ignores the reality of Jews living in Israel or Jerusalem. And it was just, it was so offensive. So there's a handful of, I think that there was a handful of Republican legislators in the state of New York that are demanding an investigation into this, and to have something like this change. Like, how did this
get on the test? Yeah. Who was asleep at the wheel? Right. When this came out, I agree. But again, it was the way the question was so prejudicial in the way it was the answer. They with the four answers with the multiple choice was just, you know, it reeked of anti-Semitism in the way that was put on the test.
So frustrating. I mean, if you saw this map, so I'd like, if the audience wants to, you could find. I think it was in the Jerusalem Post and World Israel News. They had it with the photo. I mean, you've got to go take a look at it. I mean, it's so aggravating when you think about that's, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy. But speaking of crazy, in New York, 94% of Jewish residents in George Santos' district want him to resign.
Yeah. Maybe he does. I don't know. I know there's a pending investigation. We'll see what.
I think he will eventually face criminal charges. But you know, he posted this guy who said he was Jewish posted social media things in praise of Hitler. The guy's a nutcase. I mean, he's really sick.
It was sort of like I think they found a tweet from like 10 years ago or something.
Something like that. You don't get a pass on praising Hitler.
You never get a pass on that.
I don't care. I don't care when you put that thing. You do not get a pass on praising Hitler.
Exactly. Just like Yee. And you know, you sent me that article of some stuff found at University of Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Related to Yee, Kanye West.
For those who don't know, in Gainesville, on the sidewalk with chalk was written things praising how does he pronounce? I'm sorry, I'm not Kanye West, whatever the hell his name is. I'm sorry, I couldn't name one of his tunes, but saying he was right, praising him and all that in Gainesville, you know. And the university removed it, obviously. There are a lot of Jewish students that go to Gainesville.
But there's probably a lot of students there that think Kanye West is right, you know, and that support him and agree with him. And I think this is a current challenge we have, which, by the way, did I send you the article about the new movie on Netflix?
Yeah, and you did not. I watched it and it made me uncomfortable. What was it called? Yeah. You People.
So there's this new movie and Julie Louis-Dreyfus is in it and others, but it's called, quote, You People. And it's like this Jewish family and their son has met this Muslim woman and they're, you know, marrying.
Eddie Murphy's in it.
Eddie Murphy plays her father. You know, but then they joke about Louis Farrakhan.
Not Julie Louis-Dreyfus's father, the black woman who the Jewish guy falls in love with.
Right.
Right. Okay. I just wanted to straighten that out. Right.
Yeah, and but I think it's really important. I mean, there's a lot of criticism of how they sort of deminimized Louis Farrakhan's hatred towards Jews, and quite frankly, the violent rhetoric and how much he has influenced anti-Semitism in this country. You know, and they sort of really deminimized it, really made the Jews, I feel like, look bad. I watched clips of the movie. I didn't watch the whole thing like you. I watched clips of it. I was really perturbed. I almost feel like, you know, sometimes I just want to look at Jewish Hollywood. I'm like, are you just that apologetic for who you are? I mean, are you that embarrassed that you're a Jew that you feel like you just can't, like, I don't get the need to do a movie like this.
I bet you the writers thought they were being funny. Like I say, it made me uncomfortable. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think the writers started out to say, I'm going to write a stereotypical movie about or portray Jews in a stereotypical way. They thought, oh, this is funny, but it's not. it's not. But I don't think they started out to write an anti-Semitic movie.
It's not. And, you know, I mean, we deal with all this other stuff about, you know, as we're seeing on college campuses with these CRT training about treating Jews like they are white privilege, that they don't have a right to exist in essence. Like, you need to shut up and sit down. You don't have a story. You are not discriminated against, which, you know, we'll talk about a little bit with this with Ken Marcus coming up from the Brandeis Center. But this is a growing issue in our country, and we need to have real conversations about it. And I feel like movies like that don't help.
And as long as we're talking about movies, how about Netflix glorifying Louis Farrakhan? They've got a you sent this to me, didn't you?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. They've got a series coming up that glorifies Louis Farrakhan, who is so anti-Semitic. And then let me say also, I have not given up on Brother John, the St. Pete City Council member who was appointed, who says he's a supporter of Farrakhan. We've been exchanging texts. He says he's going to have a moment to address this with other media. I guess there's been other inquiries, and I have texted back to him. I'm going to give you another 2 weeks, and I think you're avoiding me, and then I will show up at a public place, council members meeting or something. It's not a ambush interview, because I will tell you where I'm going to be with my microphone and my recorder, and then I will ask you some of the questions, and if you don't want to answer it, fine, but it will show. I mean, that's how I operated as
Which, by the way, we should remind everybody, the reason why Mike wants to interview him is because he's an open supporter of
Farrakhan, yes.
And yes. He's our community. So we're very curious about that. But I, you know, it's interesting, Mike. I mean, again, this is where I'm concerned, right? So Prime Video, Amazon Prime, you know, they publicized the book and the movie from Hebrews to Negroes that sort of had all that anti-Semitism. Somehow Jews stole their identity, and the Jews aren't the real Jews, and it was the slaves who came to America and all this stuff. I mean, it was just this whole horrific, you know, falsehood and of replacement theology, et cetera, but, you know, really fostered hatred towards the Jewish community via the Black community in this country, which is very alarming, right? And Amazon didn't succumb to pressure and kept it on. And now we've got Netflix that wants to glorify Louis Farrakhan. And yeah, I get it. He did the Million Man March, which I totally respect, is a very important thing for the Black community. But as the Jewish world, we have to look at his 3-hour Savior Day speeches he gives every year, where he pretty much is attacking Jews as Satan calls for our destruction. When you have one minority calling for the destruction of another minority, that should raise red flags.
Absolutely. And speaking of minority calling for destruction of minorities, I was upset with the students, the Palestinian and Arab students at Tel Aviv University, who are calling for an infitada and asking for 1,000 funerals a day.
Right. That was a big deal. So, you know, people.
Oh, my goodness.
This goes again. First of all, by the way, this again debunks any theory of apartheid or ethnic cleansing, because.
Right. Yes.
Tel Aviv University is a very diverse student body with a large Arab population. And so, you know, you had these Arab students that were, that are students at Tel Aviv University protesting, you know, on the public streets, in essence, calling, you know, they were shouting. So it goes back to what happened in Yemen last week. And so they're on the streets chanting, "Oh, Shahid, lie down, lie down. We will continue to fight. Oh, settler, you coward. This is Yemen that cannot be defeated. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Listen, Zionists, listen. Palestine will not surrender to the streets, you revolutionaries. Set the streets on fire with spirit and blood. We will redeem Palestine." And then they were saying, "We will not stop, even if there are 1,000 funerals every day." This is what the Arab students at Tel Aviv University were chanting their protests in Tel Aviv. So that is so alarming. And Tel Aviv University is like, well, there really wasn't anything we could do about it. You know, they had a police permit and they were on a public street, and, you know, we can't, you know, we don't condone violence,
but
sounds like there's really nothing we could do about it. Like,
yeah, no, nothing at all. The reporting has been, you know, turned around so much. Our friends from Honest Reporting struck out this week about the reporting of the terrorist attack 2 weeks ago. What was it? Seven Palestinians?
Seven Jews leaving the synagogue were killed by the terrorists. It was a little over a week ago, about a week and a half ago, Mike and I had reported.
But that was after there was a counterinsurgency where some Palestinians were killed.
Right. So in Yemen, Israel, working in security cooperation with the Palestinian Authority, raided, I think it was the Al-Aqsa Brigade terrorists was the group. The Al-Aqsa Brigade terrorists was the group it was a joint raid, right? Working together with Palestinian Authority in Yemen. The terrorists began a shootout, and I think there were 9 who were killed in the shootout. Of course, Abbas goes to the streets and is calling for, you know, Shahad.
But the Palestinians initially were in on it.
Well, of course, you know, and then, of course, you know, and the news reporting this week is that because the Secretary of State's office, through Blinken, pretty much told the Palestinian Authority, "You better not end security cooperation." Like, they rebuked Mahmoud Abbas, who came out and like, "We were ending our security cooperation. How dare you come into our territory and do this?" Of course, Israel was working with them. Israel wouldn't have gone in, but for the Palestinian Authority requesting that they go in.
And then there was some minister from the Palestinian Authority this week who said, "We can't end the security cooperation."
So they're still continuing it, like, sort of, but like low key, like they don't want people to know. But you don't hear about that on like real world reporting and like major media outlets here in the U.S.
Honest Reporting, and we've talked to the president of executive director.
Right. No, the CEO, Jackie Waxman Alexander. So
who's terrific. But they lashed out.
Yeah, they went off on international media for pretty much, you know, sort of ignoring, as they normally do, and the semantics of it and how they characterize different things in Israel going in and how they even sort of de-minimized the attack on Jews leaving prayer on Shabbat. There were 7 Jews who were brutally murdered leaving synagogue Friday night after their Shabbat prayers in retaliation by the Palestinian terrorists. And, you know, and it was sort of like this, oh, there were 7 people shot and killed tonight. Like the frustration that we feel with mainstream reporting and how they, you know, convolute the reality and they misinform the public. And so Honest Reporting, you know, really went off on them on the mainstream media this week because of it. So I'm grateful for that. I think we need more organizations who do that. But if you haven't checked out Honest Reporting yet, you need to.
They come up with good stuff. But then Rashida Tlaib praised the terrorists. Rashida Tlaib
wants to honor them. Yes, Rashida would like to honor them, you know, and stop the financing of the apartheid Israeli government and honor these terrorists who are quote unquote victims.
And they're terrorists.
So they were Al-Aqsa Martyr Brigade terrorists and Hamas, I think, as well as the Palestinian Islamic Jihad.
Now, though, on the other hand, in Congress this week, there was quite the kerfuffle with Ilhan Omar being kicked off the Foreign Relations Committee. Republicans are saying it's because she's anti-Semitic. The Democrats went crazy.
A handful of key Democrats, like the squad, Cori Bush.
But it wasn't only the squad. There was Eric Solwell. There was Adam Schiff. There was
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And by the way, I have no respect for Schiff, and I have no respect for Nather. And I know you don't.
Why? Because Schiff prosecuted the Trump?
No, because Schiff is a liar, and Schiff has no problem corrupting justice, even when he was a prosecutor. So I have real problems with that. And the Torah says you don't corrupt justice, and this man seems to be totally okay with doing that.
How did he corrupt justice?
Well, he has come out and he has openly lied when he's walked out of committee meetings on secretive information that you can't expose. I mean, that's a problem. You're corrupt.
No, wait. But what are the specifics?
Let's not get into Adam Schiff right now, because what I want to do is talk about the story.
Okay, but you said that he's a liar.
He is a liar.
Well, but next week, come back, bring me proof. That's all I'm saying. I don't know that. I just label someone a liar and not have specific incidences.
I have real problems with lawyers in particular. And
then you're a lawyer.
Exactly. Corrupting justice, because the Torah is very clear about not doing that.
Well, okay. Here is the deal. Here is where I think they were so wrong, and I have issues with Omar, but they said it was because of anti-Semitism. That had nothing to do with it. It was total retribution for the fact that the Democrats kicked off Paul Gosar from Arizona and Marjorie Taylor Greene from their committees. Well, Gosar put up a thing on social media where he was trying to kill Omar. There was a meme of that. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, who talked about the Jewish space lasers, they're both on the committees, but they're saying Omar can't be on it. That is so hypocritical.
They're not on the Foreign Affairs Committee, but it's a really powerful committee that actually decides funding between the U.S. government and Israel.
It's a very important
committee.
It is.
Ilhan Omar, who received a rebuke from the Congress under the Democratic Congress for her anti-Semitism.
So you don't think Marjorie Taylor Greene is anti-Semitic?
I think Marjorie Taylor Greene is, how do I say this, uneducated. And she's not the smartest.
Yeah, she's not person. She is not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
But
if they had kept her off, if they had kept Gosar off and then kept Omar off, I go,
okay. I get it. So you don't think it's anti-Semitism, but let me tell you what it's not. Because, you know, when I see Ocasio-Cortez and everybody else having their little hissy fits, like literally I thought I was watching like a 13-year-old having a little tissy fit at her slumber party. I mean, she's having a little tissy fit over, this is a lot Islamophobia, a beautiful black woman, Islamophobia, this is all that Islamophobia with 9/11, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't know Ocasio-Cortez, but what I do know is that you didn't have a little tissy fit when your best friend was having issues with anti-Semitism and saying nasty things about Jews. In fact, you shut your mouth and you called Jews all kinds of horrible things yourself. So I'm sorry.
Okay.
I could not get over the fact
that we're going to let everybody hear and decide for themselves. Let me tell everybody who we're going to hear from. Their little clips from each of them. And since this is radio and we can't super their names, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is first. Then Ayanna Pressley. She is the congresswoman from, where is she from? She's from Minnesota.
I'll be so embarrassed. I mean, they.
Well, anyway, her, then Cori Bush from Missouri, Eric Solwell from California, Pramila Jayapal from Washington, and then Adam Schiff, your friend, and then finally Ilhan Omar. Let's take a listen to these folks. How did you describe it? Democrats going crazy?
Well, that was the name of the article. I just think they were having tissy fizz. I mean, they sound like children having temper tantrums.
Okay, let's take a listen.
Don't tell me this is about consistency. Don't tell me that this is about a condemnation of anti-Semitic remarks when you have a member of the Republican caucus who has talked about Jewish space lasers and an entire amount of tropes and also elevated her to some of the highest committee assignments in this body. This is about targeting women of color in the United States of America. Don't tell me, because I didn't get a single apology when my life was threatened. Thank you.
I rise in opposition to the rhetoric and resolution from across the aisle, our colleagues who seek to make history for all the wrong reasons. I rise on behalf of every little girl who sees herself in the leadership of Congresswoman Omar. She is a mother, daughter, refugee, advocate, skilled policymaker, a duly and decisively elected third-term member to the U.S. House of Representatives. I have spent time in the Minnesota 5th. I have seen her pull her community through grief and loss. I have seen her stand arm in arm on picket lines with our educators and our nurses. I have seen her pass historic legislation to feed our babies in our schools. She has built coalitions, given constituents in crisis a sense of agency, and centered the most marginalized in word and deed. No matter how embattled, no matter how racially profiled, no matter how targeted, she has pressed on for peace over militarization, human rights at home and abroad, a world where an education is a fundamental right, where gender equity is recognized. I want to live in that world.
So let's talk about what's really happening. Republicans are waging a blatantly Islamophobic and racist attack on Congresswoman Omar. And I've said it before, I will say it again. The white supremacy happening is unbelievable. This is despicable. This is just a bunch of racist gaslighting. We all know it. Vote no.
Madam Speaker, when I heard that we're going to remove a member of this House from their committee for anti-Semitism, I raced down here because I thought, finally, in this chamber, there's going to be some accountability. Some accountability from this conference that continues to allow its members to root for rioters, to show sympathy for the insurrection. And so I thought, we're going to hold someone accountable for anti-Semitism. Surely it's the author of this tweet, Kanye Elon Trump, October 6th, written by Chairman Jim Jordan. October 8th, what does Kanye say? I'm going to declare DEFCON 3 on the Jews. So surely this tweet came down, right? Came down, was deleted. No, 2 more months it was kept up. 2 more months. So don't come here looking at us for anti-Semitism. Look in your own damn mirror before you ever come over here. And I yield back.
Madam Speaker, this is a revenge resolution. A revenge resolution that seeks to remove Representative Ilhan Omar's strong and necessary voice from the Foreign Affairs Committee. It is an attempt to silence her simply because you do not agree with her views and you cannot begin to understand her lived experience. Her lived experience as a war survivor, as a refugee, as somebody who brings an experience to this body that you're not even trying to understand. We have previously voted in a bipartisan manner to remove individuals from their committee assignments because of their violent actions that endangered the safety of their colleagues. That is not what today is about. Today is about revenge. It is also about the fact that Republicans want to distract the American people from the fact that they have absolutely no legislation to bring to the floor that is actually about helping the American people with their costs, with dealing with inflation. You don't have any solution, so you're trying to distract with these inane,
gentlewoman's time has expired.
Absurd, absolutely absurd resolutions. Vote no.
Madam Speaker, I rise in strong opposition to this resolution. First, as to the false pretext, 2 members of the Republican conference were removed from committees for inciting violence, encouraging violence against their colleagues. There is nothing at all at issue like that here. You want to introduce a resolution to condemn someone for inciting violence against their colleagues or against people here in Congress? Introduce a resolution against Donald J. Trump. No one has incited more violence against this chamber than Donald Trump. Now, let me talk about anti-Semitism. Do not insult our intelligence by suggesting this is about anti-Semitism. You want to introduce a resolution against someone guilty of anti-Semitism? Introduce a resolution against someone dining with anti-Semites, someone dining with white nationalists, members of your conference who are speaking at white nationalist rallies. Introduce a resolution against Donald J. Trump, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Paul Gosar, and others, but do not Do not
the gentleman's
insult
time has
our intelligence by saying this is about anti-Semitism.
The gentleman's
Vote
time has
no
expired.
On this resolution.
I didn't come to Congress to be silent. I came to Congress to be their voice. And my leadership and voice will not be diminished if I am not on this committee for one term. My voice will get louder and stronger, and my leadership will be celebrated around the world as it has been. So take your vote or not. I am here to stay, and I am here to be a voice against harms around the world and advocate for a better world. I yield back.
So again, Laureen, I get it. But had they're not being honest. If you want to remove her, fine, remove the other guys. You can't say, well, it's an important committee and all that stuff, and you got two nutcases from the Republican side on that committee.
But when the Democrats remove Marjorie Taylor Greene and Gosar, they didn't remove Ilhan Omar. And there are a lot of cries to remove Ilhan Omar at the time. So, you know, it goes both ways. That's politics, tit for tat, whatever. I don't care. But what it's not is Islamophobia. That's a lie.
No, it's retribution. It is pure and simple retribution.
I'll give you that, Mike. It might be that, but it's not Islamophobia. Okay. And I'm just not going to fall down that whole rabbit hole, what they're calling it. I mean, it's just absurd.
Okay. All right. Anyhow, we have got a really important and terrific interview that Laureen did with Ken Marcus from the Brandeis Center. He's a terrific guy with a lot of interesting thoughts about anti-Semitism. But first, we're going to take a break. This is The Third Opinion. That interview in just a moment. But have you looked at our webpage where you can listen to previous editions of The Third Opinion podcast, find out more about our hosts, and leave a comment or two? And now, back to The Third Opinion podcast and that interview. Welcome back to The Third Opinion, Two Jews, Three Opinions on WKDW and the podcast. I'm Mike Deason.
I'm Laureen Jaffe.
Okay, Ken Marcus, we've had him on before.
We have. It's been a while, but we felt like it was really important to have him back on. So Kenneth Marcus, he heads up the Louis E. Brandeis Center for Human Rights Under the Law. He's also the former head of the U.S. Department of Education Office of Civil Rights. He served as the head of that office under two administrations, both President Obama as well as President Trump.
President Trump, but he was also in the Bush administration, too.
Yes, and so he utilized the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition of anti-Semitism as guidance when he headed that position. If you recall, President Trump put it into executive order, and under his oversight, Kenneth Marcus's oversight, his department sought to have that put into rule as a regulation. And so one of the reasons why I reached out is because there has been some delay by the Biden administration to put that into rule form. And then, you know, obviously talk about a lot what's going on, because his organization is very involved with a lot of the anti-Semitism happening on college campuses right now, including at the law school at University of California, Berkeley, which Mike and I have talked about, and some other issues. So it's a
two. And Harvard, too. Listen, he's right in Boston there, isn't he, at Brandeis?
I believe he's located in New York right now. So.
Oh, okay. Well, but anyway, Harvard certainly has had, we've reported incidents about that. I should say almost every college campus, unfortunately. We have.
And we talk about that. So it's a two-part interview. So we'll jump right into it because there's a lot to cover for him. But I feel like this is probably one of the more important interviews that Mike and I do on these topics to help us get informed as to what's actually happening on our college campuses.
I founded the Louis D. Brandeis Center a dozen years ago to fight anti-Semitism, especially on college campuses, and to do it not just with education and research, although we do that, but also with law and public policy, to make sure that students and professors on college campuses have the vocabulary, the language, the understanding to defend themselves appropriately and to articulate the challenges that they're facing in ways that resonate with the administrators, because they speak to potential liability of universities and colleges if they fail to provide Jewish students the same civil rights that are available to everybody else. One of our central insights was that oftentimes Jewish students are harassed, intimidated, excluded in ways that if it happened to any other minority would clearly be seen in terms of discrimination and civil rights violations. But when it happens to Jewish students, especially if it happens in any way relating to anti-Zionism, it tends to be treated as a political disagreement for which there's academic freedom and for which the administrators just don't want to get involved. We teach the administrators and we train the students and we make it clear to everybody that the rights of Jewish students need to be protected to the same extent as everybody else. And if university administrators refuse to do that, we can hold them accountable under the law using either court cases or the federal administrative system that I used to run during two prior federal presidential administrations.
So important what your organization does. One of the things I would just want to jump right into, because this certainly, I saw that you commented on this back in December of 2022. It's a hot topic. The definition for anti-Semitism that was put out by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, the prior administration under President Trump wanted to move forward and adopt this definition to be applied to university college campuses across the country. The rule has been held up and has been delayed again. So I think it's important for people to understand what this rule does, why it's important, and its impact that it can have on U.S. college campuses, and what is happening with it presently, and what we as a Jewish community can do about it.
Sure, absolutely, Lorene, thank you. So during the prior administration, I began using the IRA working definition of anti-Semitism, where appropriate and within constitutional limits, to determine when attacks on Jewish students are motivated by anti-Semitic intent. The IRA working definition of anti-Semitism is the gold standard. It is the one internationally agreed upon definition of anti-Semitism. It has been adopted by over 30 countries. It has been embraced within the United States by the State Department during the last several administrations, starting with George W. Bush, then with Obama, then with Trump, and now even with this Biden administration, the State Department under Secretary Anthony Blinken has been using it. Now, the question is, it's one thing to use this definition, which makes clear that certain kinds of anti-Zionism are in fact anti-Semitic. It's one thing to use it when describing things that happen abroad, but are we going to use it when talking about this country? And it seems to me the answer has to be yes. Something can't be anti-Semitic if it happens in Berlin, but if it happens in San Francisco, we look the other way. So during the last administration, as the head of OCR, the Office for Civil Rights, I began using this definition in investigations of colleges where Jewish students had been abused in some way. President Trump actually elevated it. So it's not just an informal guidance, but part of an executive order. And while the Biden White House has rescinded many of President Trump's other executive orders, it hasn't rescinded that one. And in fact, the executive order from President Trump, the executive order on combating anti-Semitism, actually remains active guidance at my former agency, OCR. A lot of people don't know that, but the fact is that if a Jewish student is harassed, intimidated, excluded for being Jewish, the Trump executive order remains in place. But there are many individuals and many groups that are trying to rescind it, to take it away, to pressure Biden administration officials not to use it. That's why it's so important that during the Trump administration, I recommended that a regulation be issued that makes permanent the executive order by President Trump. And that was agreed upon in the Trump White House. And then when the Biden administration came in place and actually had time to regulate, they said they were going to do it too. But they have delayed it and delayed it and delayed it again throughout the entire Biden administration. Finally, they gave us the impression that they were going to issue this regulation by the end of December 2022. They had 2 years to do this, and yet they didn't. And in January, they announced it was going to take yet another year until the end of 2023. So at a time when Jewish students are facing higher levels of anti-Semitism on American college campuses than ever before, the Biden administration is deprioritizing and delaying efforts to deal with it. And so the soonest that we'll now see the regulation is December. And it might be delayed again. There's certainly no assurance that they're actually going to issue it in December when they've actually failed to address it during each of the times they said they would do it in the past.
You know, it's so disturbing when I think about it. And I think about, you know, we don't know who's going to be president next. We don't know what's going to happen. If it's not passed now, if it ever will be able to become a regulation, especially when we see, and, you know, Mike and I talk pretty regularly about just the almost normalization, really, of anti-Semitism on college campuses. It's become so widespread and accepted. And professors are, you know, who are grossly openly anti-Semitic are defended and protected by university systems. So it's very alarming. And I think the American Jewish community specifically needs to be aware of this, you know, to the extent that we can have a voice with the administration, you know, express our concern and our desire to see that come into regulation. I think so people can understand, we should just jump right into the University of California, Berkeley Law School, and talk about what's happening there. There was a lot of buzz towards the end of 2022 about the student organizations at the law school sort of all coming together with one common cause. And it was, you know, a common cause against any Jewish student organization that, you know, was pro-Israel, that was Zionist in any way and beyond that. So can you share with the audience, you know, exactly what happened at the Berkeley Law School, because it's still ongoing, and what it is that we can do about it, if anything?
Yeah, I would be happy to. I care a lot about Berkeley Law School. I went to Berkeley Law School. It's my alma mater. And so it is very disappointing for me to see this law school, which has such a tradition of emphasizing individual rights, is now in the forefront of denying individual rights when it comes to Jewish students. And it's a problem not just for those of us who care about Berkeley Law, Berkeley being the flagship school of the University of California, but we also know that the University of California is one of the most influential universities in the country. And what starts there, for better or for worse, often spreads around the country. So what happened, and you described it a little bit, Laureen, is that last year, at the request of the law students for justice in Palestine, 9 Berkeley law student organizations changed their constitutions in order to adopt rules prohibiting anyone who is a Zionist or who believes in the state of Israel from speaking to their groups on any topic. Now, these constitutions, as a general rule, don't address any other cause. They are group constitutions. So they specify the name of the organization, its address, the number of officers, the titles of officers, the methods of addressing officers, the board, how boards are elected, and no Zionists. That's what they do. There are no other rules precluding any other group. So for instance, the women's law students has no rule against rapists and misogynists. They can come, but if you are a feminist who is an expert on some aspect of women's law, but you're also supportive of the state of Israel, as most Jewish Americans are, then you cannot come. You cannot come, and you cannot speak on any topic whatsoever. Similarly, the Asian group does not have a rule prohibiting anti-Asian speakers. And we know, sadly, that there has been a lot of anti-Asian violence in this country in the last couple of years, including on the West Coast. And yet, if you attack an Asian American on the streets, and you should go to prison for this, but if you've done that, there's nothing in the Asian students group that prohibits you from speaking to them. But if you're Jewish and you have views similar to most Jewish Americans, you can no longer speak to the Asian American groups on any topic, including, for instance, if you wanted to talk about the need for more civil rights for Asian Americans, you can't do that if you are a Jew for whom Zionism is an important part of your identity. Similarly, for various other groups, the gay lesbian group, if you are anti-gay, if you are transphobic, there's nothing in their rules that says that you can't speak to them. But if you're a Jew and your views are similar to most of the Jewish community when it comes to Israel, and you're also gay and you want to speak out against homophobia, you cannot speak out against homophobia to this group unless you first say, now, wait a minute, I'm going to take back everything I've said about Israel and suddenly attack Israel. So these are these extraordinary rules, unprecedented. They don't apply to any other group. And yet they prevent most Jews from appearing as speakers, not just to these nine groups. And by the way, this has become so popular, there are now 14 groups. And they're not just 14 groups, but they're major groups at the law school, the women's group, the gay group, the Asian group, the African-American group, the Middle Eastern and North African Students Association. All of these groups now say no speakers who support Zionism or the state of Israel. This is not just about point of view. This is, in effect, a barrier for Jews to speak at the law school to some of the most important groups. It is, in effect, if not in express words, a barrier to Jewish participation.
Right. I mean, it really is an outright boycott. It's sort of taking intersectionality, or the new language they use, others, to an extreme. Also being a lawyer and having gone to law school, I mean, it's the student organizations in a law school are very important. They're very active, affluent. These are future leaders, and excluding a Jewish voice, even if they're not there to talk about Israel or Zionism or anything related to Judaism, excluding Jews, period, is really what it's about. And, so you have the question, like, what's the measure? So if you're a Jew and you hate Israel, and you think Israel is like this, you believe the lie of apartheid or the lie of all this other stuff that's out there, then I guess, then you can come speak and, you have that proven track record. But this is very dangerous. And I can only imagine if I was a Jewish professor or B, a Jewish student, who, like most Jews in this country, have an affection for Israel, I would feel very ostracized and isolated and concerned for my academic career. So I'd like you to talk about that a little bit and what we see happening with the Jewish students there on campus.
Yeah, I would be happy to. And I think that if anything, it's even worse than what you described, because for many Jewish students and Jewish non-students, when we talk about Israel, it's not just a matter of affection, like you might have affection, particular flavor of ice cream. It's actually a part of your identity. It's who you are. And that's the point.
Right.
That's the point, because it's not just saying if you have a particular preference or an idea or a viewpoint, we're going to disagree with you. It is if you are a certain kind of person, we're going to exclude you. We've seen that Berkeley. And Laureen, you were right to use the term boycott, and right to point out that boycotts are dangerous because they're not just about saying we won't buy this or that from the Jews. They are a first step. in the way that the Nazi boycott of the Jews was a first step. They were a first step towards marginalizing, excluding, and then destroying. You know, one of our recent cases involved Ben and Jerry's ice cream. That wasn't a college case, but it was a boycott case where Ben and Jerry's was going to refuse to sell ice cream in the state of Israel. And we got involved and we made them back down. We represented Avi Zinger, the Israeli distributor of Ben and Jerry's ice cream. And we got a victory in which that ice cream now can be sold in Israel. But it's not just about the ice cream. It's not just about wanting premium ice cream to be sold in Israel. It's about putting an end to this system in which Jews, whether in Israel or in Berkeley, are treated differently and worse than anybody else. You don't do this to any other group. There's no such rule against Chinese. There's no such rule against African Americans or Hispanics. But this notion, whether we're talking about Ben and Jerry's ice cream or whether we're talking about Berkeley Law School, this notion that you have a separate rule for Jews and non-Jews, and Gentiles can speak to any group, but Jews can only speak to some of them. This is dangerous, regardless of whether you want to speak to a law school group, because it really isn't just about speaking to law schools any more than it's just about ice cream. Right. It is about this pressure throughout the world, including in some of our best universities, to marginalize and exclude the Jewish people. And we know where that leads. And that's why we have to fight it. That's why we're fighting it when it comes to Ben and Jerry's. It's why we're fighting it in Berkeley. It's why we're fighting it in one battle after another throughout this country and around the world.
Terrific interview. And we'll get part two next week. You know, Laureen, what concerns me, again, and we've talked about it before, is that we as Jews are not marketing ourselves well, not only to non-Jews, but to young Jews. Sure. I am really concerned about how young Jews in America perceive being Jewish.
I think it's a valid point. And as we've talked about, anti-Semitism is so prevalent on social media. And, you know, this generation has grown up on social media. It's a real issue for us. So I think, you know, it's something we definitely need to be more proactive in. And I feel
it worries me what's going to happen with the next generation. I mean, it's different. I mean, I look at my kids, my grandkids, we're not doing a good marketing.
You know, I don't know if it's even marketing, it's education. I feel
whatever, but we're not doing a good job of that.
I'll agree with that. I mean, honestly, it all begins in the home, and that's the core of Judaism. It's all about the home.
You're right. You are absolutely right.
And taking that, and I also feel like in many ways, Jews in this country have gotten a little too comfortable, if you will. And
we've homogenized.
Taken Israel and other things for granted in a way that they shouldn't. And I feel like it's a real risk. And I would say this, the other thing, you know, our enemy is very shrewd, and they know that if you can capture the minds of the next generation, then you can win the war, right?
Absolutely.
And that's what's so alarming. And I almost feel like, you know, are we asleep at the wheel again as Jews? I mean, we were just asleep at the wheel 100 years ago. Like, are we asleep at the wheel again? Like, did we somehow, are we not paying enough attention? I don't know.
I agree. And that's I would like to see the Jewish community market itself better to the entire world and to Jewish kids. Let me tell you about my favorite stupid story of the week. At least it cracked me up. Somebody in Israel is suing Burger King because they initially had said that they have kosher foods, and he ordered a cheeseburger. Well, obviously, you can't have milk and meat together. Right. And he said he thought it was, fake cheese or something. I don't know what you call it.
But he
couldn't get over how good this fake cheese tasted. So he goes up to the counter. He says, "Where do you guys buy this fake cheese? I want to get it for mine." And they said, "Fake cheese? It's real cheese. We stopped being kosher a long time ago." And so he's suing Burger King now.
Oh, no.
That's like the McDonald's suit when they spilled the coffee.
So,
someone spilled coffee
that.
In their right. lap, like, you know,
that
hot
was
coffee.
25, 30 years ago. Yeah, no, I remember that.
It's just, oh, I don't God. Know. I saw that suit and I just laughed and I went, come on, man. If you're going to keep kosher, you can't have a cheeseburger. I like cheeseburgers. I grew up in a kosher home, but outside of the home, and now I don't keep kosher anymore.
You know, actually, there's a really good, I make a very delicious kosher lasagna because I use plant-based meat.
Wow.
And then you can use real cheese if you use plant-based meat, or the opposite. Let's say you want to use real meat, which I don't like to use. I use ground chicken. But if you use ground chicken, you can use like tofutti, which is kosher. Like you can use a tofutti cream cheese, and I soften it up a little bit, and then I whip it together with sauce and spices, and that becomes sort of like your cheese covering. And then like at Whole Foods, they have good, you know, fake, you know, mozzarella cheese that's like that's plant-based.
Lorene's cookbook will be coming out in the next couple of months. We'll let
delicious. There's so many ways you can keep it kosher but still feel like you're having
right,
like, you know,
a
like
cheeseburger
together. I've tricked so many non-kosher friends. It's amazing. This is the best lasagna. I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm not. Like, I just don't even tell them. I just let them think they're eating meat or whatever. I'm
That's
like,
very funny. Hey, you hear that music? We are out of time. It's been a busy show. Thank you for being with us. We're available whether podcasts are downloaded and then WKDW. This is Third Opinion. I'm Mike Deason.
I'm Lorene Jaffe.
Bye. That's our show for this week. You'll join us again next week. And don't forget, subscribe to the Third Opinion Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks for listening.